Tax update for Saturday, June the 17th, 2006. Welcome to Tax Update. The Tax Update podcast is intended for tax professionals and is not designed for those not skilled in independent tax research. All readers and listeners are expected to do their own research to confirm items raised in this presentation before relying upon the positions presented. The podcast and the related document may be reproduced freely so long as no fee is charged for the use of the document or the podcast. Such a prohibited use would include using the podcast or document as part of a CP presentation for which a fee is charged. The podcast is sponsored by Limeburg Information Services, located on the web at www.limeburgservices.com. Limeburg Information Services offers email newsletters on tax-related matters, as well as access to a library of useful information for tax practitioners that subscribe to their services. Again, you can visit them on the web at www.limeburgservices.com. This week, we're going to consider reading, writing, and FICA taxation, the taxation of FICA payments on a 10-year buyout. We're going to look at a Sixth Circuit decision that came down to resolve a split among two district courts in that circuit. Now, the Sixth Circuit essentially decided that certain payments were FICA wages, and what it looked at was two separate cases from taxpayers that were claiming amounts paid to teachers taking early retirement packages in Michigan were subject to FICA taxation. The taxpayers were claiming they should not be subject because they represented a payment for tenure. The court went on to suggest that not only are they subject to those payments, but it also suggested that the Eighth Circuit was in error in their decision in the North Dakota State University case. It was decided in 2001 on a similar issue, although they did distinguish some of the facts in this case. The Sixth Circuit joins the Federal Court of Claims in questioning the North Dakota State University decision. The Court of Claims in the CSX case in 2002 came to a different position than the Eighth Circuit did on the similar question about a payout for rights that the individual gave up as part of an early retirement package. While the IRS has issued an updated revenue ruling since all these cases came down modifying their position on the taxation of such payments, the cases still provide some useful information since the IRS had carried their position even under the prior rulings for these cases. Now, as mentioned, we end up with two cases that came up with very different results from two different U.S. district courts in Michigan. In the Apolloni case, the district court held that payments to teachers in exchange for relinquishing their tenure rights on early retirement were FICA wages, while the Clender court came to the opposite conclusion on essentially the same type of a buyout under the Michigan tenure program. The two cases were reviewed together by a panel of three judges in the Sixth Circuit. And this panel of judges split 2-1 on this decision in favor of the government's position that they were FICA wages. Well, obviously, the first starting point we have to consider is what are FICA wages? The definition of FICA wages is found in IRC under Section 3121A, which starts with the following broad definition, then defines certain exceptions. Wages under 3121A are defined for the purposes of this chapter. The term wages means all remuneration for employment, including the cash value of all remuneration, including benefits paid in any medium other than cash. Under 3121B, we're told employment means any service of whatever nature. In the two cases at hand, we had school districts that were offering to teachers an early retirement package that included a lump sum payment. In exchange for taking that package, the teachers agreed to give up their rights under the Michigan Tenure Act, which essentially provided that teachers who served for longer than a probationary period under the law automatically are granted the right to continue to employment absent reasonable and just cause, and they are allowed certain procedural protections if the districts attempted to dismiss them for reasonable and just cause. Now, in both cases, the school districts withheld FICA on the payments. The teachers in each of these cases then filed a claim for refund with the IRS, justifying their position asking for a refund of the FICA taxes based upon the North Dakota State University case from the Eighth Circuit. In both cases, the IRS denied the claims, and the taxpayers filed suit in district court. The district court ruled in favor of the IRS in one case and ruled in favor of the taxpayer in the other. And so in each case, the case was appealed up the line to the Sixth Circuit. The Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, therefore, goes on to decide this case. Now, the majority of the Sixth Circuit panel held that these payments were wages. That majority started out by determining the nature of what is wages should be interpreted broadly as their position, citing back to the Supreme Court's 1946 ruling in the Social Security Board versus Nirotko, and the Sixth Circuit's own 1999 holding in Gerbeck versus the United States. But the majority held that even without a broad reading of the statute, under these facts, the court believes we have a case where we have what are wages for FICA purposes, even with a more narrow reading. You don't have to broadly read the statute, is their position. The court emphasizes that the amount of the buyouts were at least partially controlled by the number of years of service, which to the court indicated a clear linkage between the performance of services and the receipt of payment, something that you would presume has no necessary relation to the value of the tenure rights that the teachers claimed were being purchased. The court notes, quote, in this case, the severance payments were conditioned upon a teacher having served in a certain number of years, exceeding that of obtaining tenure under Michigan law with the school district. In Apollonia, the school district offered a severance payment to teachers who had at least 10 years of service with the school district and who were at a high step in the pay scale. Similarly, in Clender, the severance payments were offered only to those teachers who had served for a certain number of years in excess of that required to achieve tenure. Clender accepted a buyout requiring 20 or more years of service with the district. Petrie, this is another person who filed as part of the Clender class action, accepted a severance package required 10 or more years of service, and Rays, a third person in this case, accepted a buyout that was offered to teachers with a minimum of 20 years of service. Plaintiffs necessarily had to have tenure to be eligible for the buyout. However, longevity and not tenure was a key factor for determining eligibility because these early retirement payments were offered to encourage teachers at a high pay rate to retire. Thus, the payments at issue, like those in sheet metal, arose out of an employment relation and were conditioned on a minimum number of years of service. So the court was looking at the fact that it was kind of by accident, the way the court viewed it, that the tenure provisions were triggered because the districts were looking primarily at those teachers who had been there a long time, presumably at the higher rates of pay, and that this was presumably to solve a budget issue by allowing them to essentially get rid of the higher rates of pay if those teachers would take the retirement program. Now, the Sixth Circuit next looked at the issue of whether, because the taxpayer was selling their tenure rights, that converted the payments into something that was not wages. The majority emphasized that since tenure was conditioned on performance of a number of years of service, in their view, the fact that it might arguably have been what was purchased didn't change the nature that it was FICA wages, since in essence these were rights that were conditioned as part of service. The court notes, quote, plaintiffs maintain the school districts were buying their tenure right. This point also greatly influences the dissent. Yet a court must not look simply at what is being relinquished at the point a severance payment is offered, but rather how the right relinquished was earned. Thus, we cannot understate the importance of the fact that a teacher earns tenure by successfully completing a probationary period. Michigan Comp Laws, Section 38.71. In other words, a teacher does not obtain tenure at the onset of employment. It is a right that is earned like any other job benefit. Admittedly, the grant of right is guaranteed and protected by statute, but we fail to see how the fact that this right is protected by statute takes away from the point that it must still be earned through services to the employer. This is a bit of a distinction from the North Dakota case. In the North Dakota State University case, you had a person who served for a certain number of years, and then a decision was made whether to grant the individual tenure or essentially terminate their services, that the tenure was earned and a new contract was entered into. As pointed out in this case, if you just kind of by default stayed on the job past that year and there was no earnings or no items that really had to be, hurdles that had to be cleared, you merely just had to not be dismissed, you automatically picked up tenure in this case. So the court held this was solely conditioned on years of service and as such was an earned benefit that was related to your service and therefore was FICA. As well, the court noted that the sale of the tenure rights was only one part of the transaction. It went on to note, in any event, the payments at issue were not in exchange solely for tenure rights. They were in exchange for the teacher's early retirement, and as such were essentially severance payments. This is fairly similar to what we saw in the old 104 cases, where taxpayers were arguing that their early retirement payment should be excluded as basically damages that would be excludable under Section 104 by pointing out some provisions that they felt would qualify for the relief for personal injuries. And the courts pointed out that you couldn't just pick and choose. If there was a whole slew of options offered, you weren't allowed to say, well, it's this one that's tax exempt. The court is taking a very similar position here on the FICA payment, saying that even if the tenure rights were exempt, there were other items in this buyout, so therefore we can't say it was solely for tenure rights. And the court goes on to know, we failed to see how this is different from other severance packages because a tenure right was exchanged. In almost all severance packages, an employee gives up something, and we have a hard time distinguishing this case from similar cases where an employee pursuant to a severance package gives up rights in exchange. Courts have consistently held that severance payments for the relinquishment of rights in the course of employment arrangement are FICA wages. In fact, we are at a loss to find a case other than the Eighth Circuit's decision to hold otherwise. Finally, the majority deals with Revenue Ruling 58301 that conceivably might render these payments to be not subject to FICA. The plaintiff had argued that in this case, they were like the case in Revenue Ruling 58301, a revenue ruling that the IRS has since revoked, but had not revoked as of the date of this particular payment, where an employee who had a right to a binding contract that entitled him to 5 years of employment agreed to an early termination payment, and that ruling held those payments were not subject to FICA. However, the IRS believed that, in fact, a different ruling, which was distinguished from 58301, was more appropriate. That is Revenue Ruling 7554, which the court summarized as below. Quote, the government contends this case presents an issue that is more closely related to Revenue Ruling 7544, where an employee under a general contract acquired both the rights to security in his employment and to additional pay or other recognition for longevity based upon years of service to the employer. Revenue Ruling 7544. In exchange for the employee's rights agreement to refrain from asserting either his seniority rights or job security rights, the employee received a lump sum payment. The IRS held because the employee had acquired his relinquished employment right through his previous performance of services, the payment constituted remuneration for services under the Railroad Retirement Act, the counterpart of FICA for railroad employee. We agree with the government and find Revenue Ruling 7544 to be the most analogous revenue ruling. And the Sixth Circuit held because that was the case, the rights were earned based on service to the employer, and that this ruling distinguished itself from Revenue Ruling 58301, that the IRS was not bound to treat these as not subject to FICA wages because they had a revenue ruling in place that said it wouldn't be. They said no. In this case, 7544 covers it much more closely. And the court rejected the Eighth Circuit holding North Dakota State University, rather agreeing with the Court of Claims position in CSX, which the court quoted. We recognize that our holding and our reliance on Revenue Ruling 7544 differs from what the Eighth Circuit held in North Dakota. However, we believe we have reached the correct result. As stated in CSX Court versus the United States, 52 Court of Claims 208, where the United States Court of Federal Claims disagreed with the holding in North Dakota. That court said, quote, rights to vacation pay, sick pay, layoff pay, and seniority constituted part of the employee's total compensation packages and HECS constituted wages. Therefore, when these job-related benefits are relinquished in favor of a lump sum payment, the transaction simply amounts to a redemption paid in cash of wage amounts previously paid in kind. Because a separation payment is simply an exchange of equivalent values, what were wages at the start remain wages at the end. As from the CSX case, now the court in Apolloni goes on to note, for the reasons we previously discussed, we agree with the reasoning of the court in CSX. In doing so, we give effect to Congress' definition of wages as all remuneration for employment, including the cash value of all remuneration, including benefits paid in a medium other than cash. Tenure rights were previously paid in kind, job security, and now are being paid in cash. The majority summarized its point at the end of their opinion. To summarize, we find of greatest significance that the tenure right at issue were earned through service to the employer. This is for two reasons. First, we see no reason to differentiate tenure rights from any other right an employee earns through service to any employer. As discussed, the courts have found the relinquishment of seniority rights, rights to bring suit, and other types of rights in exchange for a severance payment constitute FICA wages. And the court goes on and notes a number of cases where that's true. Then a court goes on, secondly, because these rights were earned through service rather than contracted for time employment, this suggests Revenue Ruling 7544 is more on point than Revenue Ruling 58301. We also want to emphasize the importance of the school district's principal purpose in offering these severance payments. The school district's purpose here was not to buy tenure rights. It was to induce those at the highest pay scales to voluntarily retire early. Relinquishment of tenure rights was incidental to the acceptance of the severance payment. A school district could not offer an early retirement payment and permit the teacher to keep his or her tenure and remain employed. The relinquishment of these tenure rights, like the relinquishment of rights in Abrahamson and Associated Electric, were necessary to accepting the severance payment. Thus, we find the severance payment issue easily fall within the definition of FICA wages as all remuneration for employment under Section 3121A. Now, as noted, one member of the panel, Judge Griffin, came to a very different conclusion, and he accepted the North Dakota state rationale. Judge Griffin notes that the majority is persuaded the ESP payments were not made in exchange for the plaintiffs forfeiting their tenure rights by the fact the eligibility to participate in ESP was conditioned upon a teacher working for a specific duration. This, the majority concludes, is an important, if not dispositive, factor in determining whether the payments arise from employment relationship for purposes of FICA taxation. I agree with the proposition that where an employment contract and past service to the employer constitute consideration for payment, such payment is indeed inextricably tied to services rendered the employer. Yet the present circumstances do not yield a similar conclusion. The majority rationale that the ESP payments were made in consideration of plaintiffs' past years of service is belied by the fact that similarly situated employees who did not relinquish their tenure rights received nothing. The majority further ignored the critical fact that the rights relinquished by plaintiffs stem from an entire separate grant of authority created by the state statute and thus required specific relinquishment of statutorily protected tenure rights. For these reasons, I would hold that this relinquishment not the years of service for which the school districts paid. Judge Griffin is emphasizing that the school districts had to get the tenure rights released in order to have an early retirement package. As well, Judge Griffin notes that other employees who did not have such tenure rights did not get the package offered to them, so the package was sweetened because of the tenure rights, and that's why he said the lump sum payment was essentially in exchange for those tenure rights. He also gives commentary on the revenue ruling. Notes, majority relies on revenue rulings to buttress its conclusion that the ESP payments are subject to FICA taxation. However, the revenue rulings at issues, which are persuasive authority at best, do not preclude the conclusion that the subject ESP payments are not taxable pursuant to FICA. Now, I said the parties cite four revenue rulings, 58301, 74252, 7544, and 2004-110, as relevant to this case. The courts in North Dakota and Pittsburgh relied on three of these rulings, 58301, 74252, and 7544. Although Revenue Ruling 2004-110 generally supports the government positions, plaintiffs contend it was promulgated in anticipation of litigation. In Revenue Ruling 58301, the IRS determined FICA wages were not on lump sum employment received by an employee's consideration for early termination of his 5-year contract. The IRS further determined the employee received payment in exchange for relinquish of contractual rights and therefore not subject to FICA taxation. Now, it noted a few other issues here. He notes and distinguishes the other case. And notes as well, goes on to talk about Revenue Ruling 74252, where an employee decided to unilaterally terminate his 3-year employment agreement were taxable as FICA wages because the contract gave the employer the right to terminate the contract at any time, so long as he paid the employee an additional 6 months salary, which it did. In the instant case, it said that it would determine the ESP payments are most like 58301 as they did not rise to employment contract. Indeed, the ESP payments are ultimately distinguishable from either rulings as they remain in exchange for a separate statutory right. Judge Griffin also did not find Revenue Ruling 7544 necessarily persuasive. It notes that Revenue Ruling 7544 is distinguishable from the present case because plaintiff's right in this case arise not from their employment contract, but rather from state law. Indeed, because of the rights bestowed by Michigan Comp Law Section 38 5.101. Plaintiffs possessed an alternative source of consideration. Accordingly, the school districts had an alternative basis for providing ESP payments. And Judge Griffin also noted in footnote 7 that plaintiffs note the revenue ruling 2004-110 specifically states it would not apply to payments made by an employer prior to January 12, 2005. Plaintiff's observation is well taken. Even if this court were persuaded by this ruling, a large portion of plaintiff's payments would remain unaffected because ESP payments predate its applicability. Okay, now the question is, where do we stand? Clearly, the IRS has revoked Revenue Ruling 58301. And the IRS position we can presume in a case anything like this is going to be that we have FICA wages. Whether they'll be sustained in this position should somebody choose to litigate is another issue entirely. The Eighth Circuit may arguably still hold these are not FICA wages, and Judge Griffin's dissent in Apolloni, neither the Eighth Circuit nor the Apolloni dissent, requires the old ruling be there for it to work. Therefore, it is very possible that a judge could still come to the conclusion that such payments are something other than FICA wages. However, for the most part, most employees are going to find their employer is going to default to including these amounts as wages. Employers generally are not going to want to take the risk of being assessed by the IRS for failing to withhold FICA wages when they should have, and potentially getting subjected to both halves of the FICA, the half they didn't withhold plus the half they owe. Remember that if they treat them as FICA, then half of the payment is made by the employee anyway, so most employers probably are going to take these funds out. That means that a taxpayer is probably going to have to file a claim for refund and is almost certainly from the IRS position going to face the same result that the Apolloni and the Klender plaintiffs face, where the IRS denies their claim for refund and the taxpayers would be forced to sue in district court or hope that before their rights expire, somebody wins the case. And the case is handled, and the IRS finally gives in and agrees that basically they're going to pay the FICA refund claims. It may be a protective claim situation if that comes down. But the IRS clearly, with the issuance of the new revenue ruling in 2004, made it very clear that they believe these are FICA wages and they're backing off of the 58301 standard. Now, it's important to note historically that when 58301 was issued, probably the IRS's major concern was with individuals counting items as FICA wages when they shouldn't have, because there was much more of an idea back then that you wanted to qualify for Social Security because it was considered a good deal. And so people tried to qualify. That explains much of the law in the 50s on FICA and self-employment taxes. Today, the presumption goes the other direction a half century later, that in fact these taxes are bad news for taxpayers end up paying because the benefits they receive are not significant and or they've already qualified for as much as they're going to get. Therefore, we're beginning to see the IRS revise many of these holdings to go the other direction. If taxpayers face this situation, you probably need to advise them that a claim for refund is likely to be denied and discuss the issues that may arise if they want to try to move forward and try to collect this. You also probably should keep an eye on whether any cases are being taken to court in your circuit court that may have a holding that you could rely upon. Right now, we only seem to know that in the Eighth Circuit we're okay. We also know the Court of Claims now has held against us. And so it looks like in the Sixth Circuit, you don't have much choice. The Court of Claims is against you. The Sixth Circuit's against you, presuming that they continue to follow this. So basically there, we're probably stuck unless we can get the Supremes to listen to this thing. In the other circuits, in the Eighth Circuit, we probably have a very good chance, though it'll be interesting to see whether the Eighth Circuit considers the new ruling to change the matters at all. And in other circuits, we're basically sitting back waiting to see what happens. Well, this has been Tax Update. Hopefully you've enjoyed listening and you'll be back next week as we try to run these by once every week. Remember, these podcasts are sponsored by Lineberg Information Services on the web at www.lineburgservices.com. You can visit them at that location to look into subscribing to their services with email newsletters and information of interest to tax professionals. This has been Tax Update.